as if you don't just take it for granted once you're inside. There unfortunately appears to be a distinct lack of women accepting of my breeding potential. So in your youth, you are not a threat to me.
I see.
Across the room, Jimmy is trying to open his juice with one hand. The other hand stays at his side. I can't tell if he can't move it or just doesn't want to. Smitty comes over and helps him.
"It'll come to you," he says.
"Do you feel that I'm a threat to you?" Humble asks.
"No, you seem like a pretty cool guy." I munch. Humble nods. His food, which was sitting on the plate in front of him, very innocent and oblivious, gets destroyed over the next 20 seconds as he eats half of it. I continue my slow and steady pace.
"When I was your age..."
"You're 15, right?" I nod.
"How'd you know?"
"I'm good with ages. When I was 15, I had this chick who was 28. I don't know why, but she loved me. Now, I was doing a lot of pot back then. My whole life was pot."
It's weird how your stomach can come back around. As I tune Humble out, I eat not because I want to, not because I have to overcome anything, not to prove myself to anyone, but because it's there. I eat because that's what people do. And somehow, when the food is put in front of you by an institution, when there's a large gray force behind it, and you don't have to thank anyone for it, you have the animal instinct to make it disappear, before a rival like Humble comes along and snatches it away. I think, as I chew, my problem might be too much thinking.
"That's why you need to join the army, soldier."
"I thought I was already in the army, sir."
"You're in the mental army, Gilner, not the U.S. Army."
"So I should join?"
"I don't know. Can you handle it?"
"I don't know."
"Well, you seem to know that you like order and discipline. That's what the army offers young men like you, Gilner, and that's what you're getting here."
"But I don't want to be in the army. I want to be normal."
"You've got some considering to do then, soldier, because normal ain't no job as far as I'm concerned."
"Do you have a girlfriend?" Humble asks. "What?"
"Do you, somewhere out there? You got a hot little 15-year-old?"
He points his food-colored fork at me.
"No."
I smile, thinking of Nia.
"They got cute ones, though."
Humble runs his hand through hair that is no longer there. He has hairy dark arms with tattoos of jokers, swords, bulldogs, and pirate ships.
"They just keep making the girls cuter and cuter."
"It's all the hormones," I say.
"That's right. You're very smart. You got any sugar?"
I hand over a sugar packet. I've finished my chicken, and I could eat more, frankly, but I don't know who to ask. Might as well make the tea. I open the tea bag, which is labeled Sweet Touch Knee, a brand I have never heard of and am not convinced actually exists, and stain my water with a bunch of deep dips. As I'm finishing up, Smitty approaches with a second tray of food, identical to the first.
"You look like you could handle some seconds," he says.
"Thanks."
"Eat up."
I tackle the second chicken. I'm a working machine. Part of me works that didn't before. "The girls, they drink all this milk with cow hormones," I say between bites, "and they develop a lot younger."
"You're telling me," Humble says. "The crazy thing is how the girls in my day were a lot better than my father's girls. I wonder what the next generation will be like.
Sex robots."
"Where are you from?"
"Around here."
"This neighborhood?
Nice.
Must have been a quick ride.
If you came by ambulance.
And I'm not assuming, and I'm not judging. I'm just being curious."
He eats two gigantic bites of his food, chews, and continues.
"How did you get here?"
He's broken the rule of 6 North. But maybe it's not a rule. Or maybe eating with someone breaks it. I checked myself in.
"You did? Why?"
"I was feeling pretty bad. I wanted to kill myself."
"Buddy, that's what I told my doctor the other week. I told him, 'Doc, I'm not afraid of dying. I'm only afraid of living, and I want to put this bayonet through my stomach.' And then I stopped taking my blood pressure medication. Because I have high blood pressure on top of everything else, on top of the drugs they have me on here that keep me whacked out of my mind. If I don't eat lots of salt to regulate my blood pressure, I'll die. So when I told him I wasn't taking my medication, he said, "What, are you crazy? Are you trying to kill yourself?" And I looked him right in the eyes and said, "Yes." And they carted me off here. Huh. The problem is I've been living in my car for the last year. I have nothing. I have the clothes on my back and that's it. The only thing I have is the car. And now the car has been towed and all my stuff is inside. There's $3,500 worth of film equipment in there.
Wow.
So over the next few days I have to call the police station, the tow yard, get myself into an adult home, and talk to my daughter. She's about your age. The mother I'm completely over, but the daughter I love to death. The mother I'd like to love to death. Heh. Don't do me any favors. Only laugh if it's funny.
It is.
Good. Because right now I don't have you pegged as a yuppie. You're something else. I'm not sure what you are, but I'm going to find out.
Cool.
I'm gonna go get my medication so I can sit through this afternoon with my head completely whacked. Humble slides away. I finish eating the chicken. When it's done, clean plate. I feel better than I have about anything I've done in a long time. Maybe a year. This is all I need to do. Keith was hesitant at the Anxiety Management Center. But he was right. All you need is food, water, and shelter. And here I have all three. What next? I look across the dining room, and three of the younger people, the big girl, the girl with dark hair and blue streak, and the blonde girl with cuts, are all sitting together.
Come here, Blue Streak beckons.
Chapter 23. It's been a while since a bunch of girls asked me over to their table. First time, really.
Me? I point at myself.
No, the other new guy,
Blue Streak says. I'm not sure what to do with my tray. I get up, then turn back, then turn toward the girls, then swivel.
On the cart,
Blue Streak says. She turns to the big girl.
God, he's so cute.
Did she just say that? I put my tray on the cart and sit at the vacant seat with the girls.
What's your name?
Blue Streak asks.
Craig.
So, what's it like to be the hottest guy in here, Craig?
My body hitches and jerks up as if on a pulley system. She's got it all wrong. She's the hot one. It's tough to tell whether her skin or teeth are the more perfect white. Her eyes are dark and her lips pouty and open. The blue streak accents the contrast of hair and face, and she smiles at me. That's definitely smiling. I don't know how I didn't notice her hotness before when I looked into the dining room.
Jennifer, the big girl says. She leans toward me. I'm Becca. Don't take advantage of Jennifer. She's a sex addict.
Jennifer smacks her lips.
Shut up!
She turns back.
I'm only here for one more day. She slithers forward. You want to spend it with me?
I think about what Humble would say. He would say, yeah, absolutely, because he's the alpha male. I try to develop and drop my words, keeping my voice deep and level.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good, she says, and there's a heat on my knee and a hand moving up my leg.
She leans in.
I think you're really hot.
The hand encloses my thigh.
I have my own private room. Because I'm so messed up, they won't let me sleep with anybody else.
You have your own private room because you're a slut, Becca corrects, and Jennifer kicks her.
Ow!
Without warning, the blonde girl with the cuts on her face gets up and speed walks out of the room. I look through the window for her. Nothing.
Forget her, Jennifer says. She's no good for you.
Then, sparking an out-of-body experience that truly makes me question whether I'm dreaming this or have died and gone to some kind of awesome hell, she flicks her tongue around her lips in a perfect O. Something flashes out in the hall. The blonde girl streaks to the window. I can't be sure it's her,
I mean, it is a her. It has breasts. And I think I recognize her small body and wife beater. But I can't see her face because she presses up a piece of paper against the glass. Beware of penis. The sign slides down as if on an elevator. What are you looking at? Jennifer asks, turning back. I eye her body as she swivels. From the waist up, she doesn't look like she has a penis. I keep my peripheral vision on the hall in case the messenger returns. Ha! Becca is like, Noelle did it to you again. She what? Jennifer stands. She has a round and totally female shape. Her legs are encased with jeans that have frills around her butt. I can't believe her. Hey! She turns back. You looking at my pants? Yeah, I gulp. I've lost all alpha maleness. Could I be like a theta male? They have to get lucky sometime. Being on top of the sexual food chain is a lot of pressure.
I made them myself, she says. I'm a fashion designer.
Wow, really? That's like a real job. My mind spins. It's somehow fallen off the sex track into grade school logic. I thought you were my age. How'd you learn to design clothes? All right, Smitty strides in. Playtime's over. Come on, Charles.
What the hell?
Jennifer jumps a few inches into the air and stomps her feet. Then, horror of horrors, her voice drops 2 octaves. You guys won't let me have any fun. It's a bad voice, even for a guy, like a frog croaking. Becca laughs and laughs, doubling over on herself, and all I can do is catch my breath and stare goggle-eyed at Jennifer for signs. It can't be. She's flat, that's all. She has big hands. Lots of girls have big hands. She doesn't have an Adam's apple. Oh, wait. She's wearing a turtleneck. Come on, don't bother Craig, Smitty says.
But he's so cute.
He's not cute. He's a hospital patient like you. You're supposed to get out tomorrow. Don't jeopardize it. Have you taken your medicine yet?
Hormone treatments.
Jennifer/Charles winks at me. Come on, enough. Becca laughs, sighs. Oh, she got you good. I'm getting my meds. I look down at the table as they leave. I need some meds. I glance up and see patients lined up at the desk next to the phone, the nurse's station, eagerly passing the time in their own little ways. President Armelio bopping from foot to foot, Jimmy holding the hand that refuses to work, before getting pills in little plastic cups. Jennifer/Charles and Becca eventually appear at the end of the line, chatting and gesticulating, and Jennifer/Charles blows me a kiss. I don't think I need to be in line behind them right now. Besides, all I take is Zoloft in the morning. If they wanted me on something midday, they would have told me. When Becca and J.C. are gone, and I'm still sitting shell-shocked at the table, another sign appears at the window, this one inching up from below as if hoisted by spider threads. Don't worry. He, she, it gets everybody. Welcome to 6 North. When I go out to find her, she isn't there. I ask the nurse wrapping up her dispensing duties if I need any meds, and she says I'm not scheduled for any. I ask her if I can have some. She asks what I need them for. I tell her to deal with this crazy place. She says if they had pills for that, they wouldn't need places like this in the first place, would they? Chapter 24. So, what's it like? Mom asks, holding a tote bag of toiletries, with Dad and Sarah next to her. We're at the end of the right H leg, me in one chair facing the three of them. Visiting hours are from 12 to 8 on Saturday. Sarah doesn't let me answer. It's like one flew over the cuckoo's nest, she says, excited. She's dressed up in jeans and a fake suede jacket for 6 North. I mean, all these people look like serious crazies. Shh, I tell her. Jimmy's right there. Jimmy is behind her at the window, sitting with his arms crossed as usual, out of his shirt and into a clean navy robe. Who's Jimmy? Mom asks eagerly. The guy I came in with downstairs. I think he's schizophrenic.
Doesn't that mean he has 2 personalities?
Sarah asks, turning.
Like, he's not just Jimmy, he's also Molly or something?
No, you'd be surprised. That's a different one. I raise my eyebrows. Jimmy's just a little scattered. Jimmy sees me looking at him and smiles.
I tell you, you play those numbers, it'll come to you,
he chirps. I think he's talking about lotto numbers, I explain. I've been trying to figure it out.
Oh, my gosh.
My sister covers her face. No, Sarah, don't do that. Watch, Mom says. She turns around.
Thank you very much, Jimmy.
I tell you, it's the truth.
I like this place, Mom turns back. I think it's full of good people.
I really like it, Dad leans in. When can I join?
But when no one laughs, he leans back, clasps his hands, sighs.
Is that a transvestite?
Sarah asks. J.C. is down the hall, like 40 feet away, and I don't know for the life of me how Sarah suspects something out there that I couldn't see at point-blank range.
No, now listen.
Is it? Dad squints.
Guys!
Transvestite!
Jimmy shrieks. He does it at top range. I haven't heard him that loud before. The entire hall, which admittedly is just me, my family, J.C., and the older professor-type woman with the glasses, stops and stares.
I tell you once, it'll come. It come to you.
J.C. starts walking toward us.
Are we talking about me?
He asks in his guy voice. He waves at Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy.
He comes right up between me and my sister.
Craig, your name is, right?
Yeah, I mumble.
Wow, is this your family?
Yeah. I tip my palm at each of them. It's at the level of the frills on his pants. My dad, he juts his lip out. My mom, she nods, all smiles. And my sister Sarah, she reaches out a hand.
Oh my God, so lovely, J.C. says. I'm Charles.
He shakes with everyone.
They're going to take really good care of your son here. He's a good guy.
How about you? What are you in for? Dad asks.
I kick him. Doesn't he know what not to ask?
It's okay, Craig.
J.C. touches my shoulder.
My gosh, did you just kick your dad? I never even did that.
He addresses Dad.
I have bipolar, sir. And I had an episode, and they brought me here. I'm going back upstate today. But the doctors are very attentive here, and the turnaround time is great.
Wonderful, Mom says.
Of course, J.C. gestures to us. It's a lot better when you have family support. They want to make sure they discharge you into a safe environment. I don't have that.
He shakes his head.
Craig, you're very lucky.
I look at them, my safe environment. I frankly wouldn't be surprised to find any of them in 6 North.
Well, I'll leave you guys to your afternoon, J.C. says.
He walks away slowly. Jimmy makes an indecipherable, high-pitched whining noise.
That's applause, isn't it?
Dad asks, throwing a thumb behind him.
I like that.
Those are awesome pants, Sarah says.
Okay, so let's get down to business, Craig. Mom is like,
what do you need?
I need a phone card. I need you guys to take my phone and leave it plugged in so the calls register. I need some clothes, like what you were bringing before, Mom. I don't need towels, they have those. Magazines would be good. And a pencil and paper, that would rock.
Simple enough. What kind of magazines?
Science magazines, he loves those, Dad says.
He might not be up for science magazines right now. Mom answers. Do you want anything lighter? Do you want Star? Sarah asks.
Sarah, why would I want Star?
Because it's awesome.
She reaches into her purse, her first one, black, a recent mom purchase, and unrolls a glossy pink monstrosity, complete with pictures of the most recent spectacular outing of a celebrity breast in public. I hold it up for Jimmy.
Mm-hmm, he says. I tell you, it come to you.
That's very nice,
says the professor woman with bugged-out eyes, who I somehow didn't realize had migrated right behind me.
Oh, excuse me, she looks up. I wasn't listening to your conversation at all.
She walks to her room. Sarah says.
I'll take it,
I say. I put it under my seat. I think the floor will enjoy it. Is it just me, or are you starting to develop a sort of allegiance to the tribe? Dad asks.
Shh,
I smile.
Craig, the next order of business. Have you called Dr. Barney?
No.
Have you called Dr. Minerva?
No.
Well, they both need to know where you are, for health insurance reasons, and because they're your doctors and they care about you, and this is going to be very important to them.
Their numbers are in my phone.
Well, let's call them. We picked up your phone from the front.
Mom reaches into her bag.
No.
Dad grabs her hands. Don't take out the phone.
Don't be ridiculous, honey. Craig's the one who's not allowed to have it, not us.
Well, I don't think we want to be getting our son in trouble. This isn't the kind of place you want to be getting sent to a timeout.
I look at him.
That's really not that funny.
What?
Oh, sorry, he says.
No, Dad, seriously, it's not... I mean, this is serious business.
I'm just trying to lighten the mood, Craig.
Well, that's what you're always trying to do. Let's just not do it here.
Dad nods, looks me dead in the eyes. Slowly and regretfully, he banishes all the smiling and joking from his face. And for once, he's just my dad, watching his son who has fallen so low. All right, then. We stay quiet.
Is that the truth, Jimmy?
I ask, without looking at him.
It's the truth, and it come to you.
I smile. We'll handle the phone later, Dad sums up.
Next order of business? Mom asks.
How long I'm going to be in here, I think.
How long do you think?
A couple of days. But I haven't seen the doctor yet. Dr. Mahmood.
Right. How is he? Is he good?
I don't know, Mom. You met him for as long as I did. He makes rounds soon, and I'll get to talk with him.
I think you need to stay here until you're better, Craig. You don't want to come out early and have to come back. That's how you get in the system.
Right. I won't. I think that's actually a big part of places like this. They make them so you don't want to come back.
How's the food?
Sarah asks. Oh, I almost forgot. I look at my family. I know I shouldn't be proud about this. It's like really sad that this is my big accomplishment of the day. But I ate everything at lunch.
You did?
Mom stands up, pulls me up, and hugs me.
Yeah.
I pull away. It was chicken. I actually ate 2 helpings of it. Son, that is a big one. Dad gets up and shakes my hand.
No, it's not. It's really simple. Everybody does it. But for me, it's like a stupid triumph. No,
Mom says, looking me in the eyes.
What's a triumph is that you woke up this morning and decided to live. That's a triumph. That's what you did today.
I nod at her. Like I say, I'm not a crier.
Yeah, 'cause if you had died,
Sarah is like,
that would have sucked.
She rolls her eyes and hugs my leg. I sit back down. Once the food is in front of you, it's just like, eat. I mean, they're professionals here. They know how to take people and put them in a routine that gives them something to do.
That's right, Mom says. So what are you going to do now?
I think there are activities.
Hey, Craig, is this your family?
President Armelio steps on the scene. His half-hair lip and hair shock my sister, but his relentless enthusiasm for just, I don't know, living, would knock the fear out of anybody. He shakes all the hands and says we're a beautiful family and I'm a good guy, he can tell.
Craig's my buddy. Hey, buddy, you want to play cards?
President Armelio holds up a deck of playing cards like he just fished it out of the sea.
Yeah, absolutely,
I say. I stand up. When was the last time I played cards? Before the test, probably. Before high school.
All right, Armelio says. My kind of guy. Let's do it. I've been looking and looking, Nobody here likes to play cards like I do. What do you want to play? Spades? I'll crush you, buddy. I'll crush you.
I look at my parents.
We'll call you, Mom says. And hey, what about sleeping?
I'm wired right now, I say. But I'll crash. I'm starting to get a headache.
Headache? Buddy, once I crush you in spades, you're going to have a lot bigger headache.
Armelio toddles away to the dining room to set up the cards.
See ya,
Sarah says, hugging me.
Bye, son.
Dad shakes my hand.
I love you,
Mom says. I'll call you with the doctor's phone numbers.
And bring a phone card.
And I'll bring a phone card.
You hang in there, Craig.
Yeah, I will.
And as soon as they're around the bend, I head into the dining room and learn how to play spades for the rest of the afternoon, which Armelio absolutely does crush me in.
Chapter 25. I'm afraid of making phone calls. The phone on 6 North is a hubbub of activity, with Bobby and the blonde burned-out type, who I learn is named Johnny, fielding calls from, I assume, their respective female counterparts. Bobby starts off his calls happy and says baby a lot, but then he gets angry and slams the phone down saying bitch. Smitty tells him not to do that. Bobby walks away leaning back with a particularly potent aura of not caring. 5 minutes later, another call comes in for him, and he's back to baby. He doesn't ever answer the phone, though. President Armelio has that job. When he answers, he always says Joe's Pub, and then finds whoever the call's for. In a rare moment when Johnny and Bobby leave the phone open, I walk up to it with the phone card that Mom brought me 20 minutes after she left with Dad and Sarah. I pick up and hear the dial tone, dial the 800 number for the phone card, and then stop. I can't do it. I just don't want to deal with it. People on the outside world don't know what's happened to me. I'm in a sort of stasis right now. Things are under control. But the dam will break. Even if I'm here just through Monday, the rumors will start flying, and the homework will pile up. Where's Craig? He's sick. He's not sick. He got alcohol poisoning because he can't handle real liquor. I heard he took someone's pills and freaked out. I heard he realized he's gay and he's coming to grips with it. I heard his parents are sending him to a different school. He couldn't handle it here anyway. He was always such a loser. He's freaking out in front of his computer. He can't move or anything. He's catatonic. He woke up and thinks he's a horse. Well, whatever. What's question 3? There were 2 messages on my phone when I came in, and now there are probably more, each one necessitating a call back, and the call back possibly necessitating another call back, tentacles, leading me right back to where I was last night. I can't go there, so I wait. I can wait 5 minutes. But then Bobby's on the line. And then I wait another 5 minutes. And the messages are piling up. And this isn't even counting email. What sort of hellish assignments have my teachers emailed out?
Excuse me, are you using the phone?
The giant black woman with the cane asks as I stare at it.
Yeah. I pick up the receiver in my hands. Yes, I am.
Okay.
She smiles, rolling her gums, not showing teeth. I start dialing, enter my PIN, enter my own number.
Please enter your password, then press the pound sign.
I obey.
You have 3 new messages.
1 more than before, not so bad.
First new message. Message marked urgent.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Craig, it's Nia. We talked, and you were sounding really bad. I just wanted to make sure you were doing all right. And since you're not answering, it's like 2 a.m., I mean, why would you be answering? But I'm kind of worried that maybe you went and did something stupid because of me. Don't. I mean, it's sweet, but don't. Okay, that's it. I'm with Aaron. He's being a total dick. Bye. To erase this message, I hit 7. Next message.
Craig, it's Aaron. Call me back, son. Let's chill.
I hit 77. Next message.
Hello, Mr. Gilner. This is your science teacher, Mr. Reynolds. I got your phone number from the student directory. We really need to talk about the lack of your labs. I'm missing 5 of them.
7-7. End of messages. I put the phone down like it's a dangerous animal. I pick back up, call home. Can't stop now. Sarah, can you get the phone numbers of Nia and Aaron out of my cell? And look through the recent missed calls for something from Manhattan? I have to call my science teacher.
Sure. How are things over there?
I look to my left. A Hasidic Jewish guy, complete with the white pants, yarmulke, tassels hanging off him, braided hair, and sandals, dashes down the hall toward me. Scraps of red food dot his dark beard, and his eyes are wild and unhinged. He says to me, I'm Solomon.
I've heard about you. I'm Craig, but I'm on the phone.
I cup the receiver.
I would ask you to please keep it down. I'm trying to rest.
He turns and races away, holding his pants.
Ooh, Solomon introduced himself to you, hoots the woman with the cane. That's big.
It's normal, I tell my sister.
Okay, here.
She gives me Nia's and Aaron's and the teacher's numbers. I write them down on a scrap of paper that Smitty has given me. I should have known these before. Nia's looks good written down, wholesome and useful. The science teacher's looks jagged and hateful. I may not be able to call him until tomorrow.
Thanks, Sarah. Bye.
I hang up and look toward the lady with the cane.
Hey, I'm Craig, I say.
Ebony.
She nods. We shake hands.
Ebony, it's cool if I just make one more call?
Of course.
I dial the 800 number, enter my PIN, dial Nia.
Hello? Hey, Nia, it's me.
Craig, where are you?
It's funny how people ask that as soon as they get you on the phone. I think it's a byproduct of cell phones. People, girls and moms especially, want to nail you down in physical space. The fact is that you could be anywhere on a cell phone, and it shouldn't be important where you are. But it becomes the first thing people ask.
I'm at a friend's house in Brooklyn.
I wonder, too, how many lies cell phones have contributed to the world.
Uh-huh, Craig. I don't think so. What do you mean?
I wipe sweat off my brow. The sweat is starting again. This isn't good. I was sweating down in the ER, but I wasn't sweating at lunch.
You're not at any friend's house. You're probably at some girl's house.
I look at Ebony. She smiles and leans forward on her cane.
Yeah, totally. I know you. Last night you had me on the phone. Tonight you're out hooking up with some girl.
Sure, Nia.
Seriously, how are you? Thanks for calling back. I was worried.
I know. I got your message.
I don't want you to freak out over me. I think you just need some time to decompress a little bit and not think about me and think about someone else. Because, like, I know we might be good for each other, but I'm with someone else, you know?
Right. I wasn't freaking out about you last night, actually.
No?
No, I was freaking out about, like, much bigger things. I was having kind of a crisis, and I wanted to reach out to somebody who understood.
But you asked me if we would ever have been able to be together.
Well, I was trying to clear that up because, you know, I wanted to do something stupid. She drops her voice.
Kill yourself?
Yeah.
You wanted to kill yourself over me?
No, I scowl. I was just in a really bad place, and you were part of it, obviously, because you're a part of my life, just like Aaron is a part of it, and my family is a part of it. But I thought you could clear something up for me before I...
Craig, I'm so flattered.
No, you have the wrong idea. Don't be flattered.
How could I not be? I never had a boy want to kill himself for me before. It's like the most romantic thing.
Nia, it wasn't about you.
Are you sure?
I look down, and the answer is right there in my chest, and it's resounding. Yes, I have bigger problems than you.
Ah, okay.
And you shouldn't assume that everything is always about you.
Whatever. What's wrong with you?
Nothing. Everything's a lot better now, actually.
You're acting like a total dick. Do you want to come out tonight?
I can't.
Did Aaron call you? We're having a big party at his house.
Right. I'm probably not going to be partying for, like, a while. Like, ever, maybe.
Is everything okay now?
Yeah, I'm figuring some things out.
At your friend's house?
Correct.
Are you in, like, a crack den or something?
No, I yell. And just then, President Armelio walks up to me.
Hey, buddy, you want to play spades? I'll crush you.
Not now, Armelio.
Who's that? Nia asks.
Leave him alone. He's talking with his girlfriend. Ebony taps Armelio with her cane.
She's not my girlfriend, I whisper at her. Who's that?
My friend Armelio.
No, the girl.
My friend Ebony.
Where are you, Craig?
I gotta go.
All right.
Nia trails her voice off.
I'm glad you're doing, better.
I'm doing a lot better, I say. She's done, I think. She's done, and you're done with her.
See ya, Craig.
I hang up. I think that's over, I say to myself. Then I decide to announce it to the hall. I think that that's over. Ebony stomps her cane, and Armelio claps.
Something deep in my guts, below my heart, has made a shift to the left and settled in a more comfortable place. It's not the shift, but it's a shift. I picture Nia with her gorgeous face and little body and black hair and pouty lips and Aaron's hands all over her, but also with her pot smoking and the pimples on her forehead and making fun of people all the time and the way she's always so proud of how she's dressed. And I picture her fading. I play cards with Armelio in the dining room until Bobby pokes his head in.
Craig, it says on your door Dr. Mahmood is your doctor. He's making his rounds.
Chapter 26. I don't want to be here, I tell him at the entrance to my room, where I catch him before he visits Muqtada. I don't think it's the place for me.
Of course not, Dr. Mahmood nods.
He has on the same suit he had on earlier in the day, although that feels like last year.
If you liked it here, that would be a very bad prognosis.
Right, I chuckle. Well, I mean, everybody's friendly, but I feel a lot better, and I think I'm ready to go. Maybe Monday? I don't want to miss school. Also, Doc, right now the phone messages and emails are bunching up and the rumors are flying. I just talked to this girl, and I did okay. But the tentacles are coiled and the pressure is rising, getting ready to pounce on me when I leave. If I'm in here too long, I'll have that much more to do when I get out.
We can't rush it, Dr. Mahmood says. The important thing is that you get better. If you try to leave too soon, suddenly everything is better. We doctors get suspicious.
Oh, well, you don't want the doctor who can sign you out of the psychiatric hospital getting suspicious.
Right.
Right now, to me, you look much better. But maybe this is a false recovery. A fake shift.
I'm sorry?
A fake shift. That's what I call it. When you think you've beaten it, but you haven't.
Exactly. We don't want one of those.
So I'm going to be here until I have the real shift?
I don't follow.
I'm going to be here until I'm cured?
Life is not cured, Mr. Gilner.
Dr. Mahmood leans in.
Life is managed.
Okay. I'm apparently not as impressed by this as he would like. He arches back.
We don't keep you here until you are cured of anything. We keep you here until you are stable. We call it establishing the baseline.
Okay, so when will my baseline be established?
5 days, probably.
1, 2, 3... Thursday? I can't wait until Thursday, Doctor. I have too much school. That's 4 days of school. If I miss 4 days, I will be so behind. Plus my friends.
Yes?
My friends will know where I am.
Aha. Is this a problem?
Yes.
Why?
Because I'm here. I gesture out at the hall. Solomon shuffles by very quickly in his sandals and tells someone to be quiet. He's trying to rest.
Mr. Gilner.
Dr. Mahmood puts a hand on my shoulder.
You have a chemical imbalance, that is all.
If you were a diabetic, would you be ashamed of where you were?
No, but...
If you had to take insulin and you stopped and you were taken to the hospital, wouldn't that make sense?
This is different.
How? I sigh. I don't know how much of it is really chemical. Sometimes I just think depression's one way of coping with the world. Like some people get drunk, some people do drugs, some people get depressed. Because there's so much stuff out there that you have to do something to deal with it.
Ah, this is why you need to be in here longer, to talk about these things,
Dr. Mahmood says.
You have a psychologist, correct? Have you called your psychologist?
Shoot, I knew I was forgetting something.
You need to call. Your psychologist will come here to meet with you.
What is her name, or his?
Dr. Minerva?
Oh, Dr. Mahmood says. His lips curl into a faraway smile.
Wonderful. Get Andrea down here.
Andrea? I never knew her first name. She keeps it like a big secret. It's blanked out on all her degrees. She says it's part of policy. He waves his hand.
Make an appointment with her. Then we'll be that much closer to coming up with your treatment plan and getting you out of here as soon as possible. We will try for Thursday.
Not before Thursday?
No.
Thursday, I mumble to myself, looking across the room at Muqtada's prone lump.
5 days, that's it. Everything will be fine, Mr. Gilner. Your life will wait. You just participate in the group activities and call Dr. Minerva. And when you grow up to be rich and successful, you don't forget me, okay?
Okay.
Can please you close the door?
Muqtada asks from his bed.
Mr. Muqtada, you are the next. How come you are always sleeping, sleeping, sleeping?
Dr. Mahmood walks past me. I call Mom to report the news, and then I call Dr. Minerva. She says she's sorry I took this turn for the worse, but it's always 2 steps forward, 1 step back.
If this is my 1 step back, I tell her, what am I going to do next? Win the lottery and get my own TV show?
That'd be a good TV show, actually, I think. A guy winning the lottery in a psych hospital.
Dr. Minerva can't come in tomorrow because it's Sunday, but she says she'll be in on Monday.
I'm momentarily surprised by the distinction. In 6 North, there probably won't be much difference.
Chapter 27.
They say there's going to be a pizza party tonight, Humble tells me at dinner.
Dinner is chicken tenders with potatoes and salad and a pear. I eat it all.
But they say that every night.
What's a pizza party?
We all chip in the money and get pizza from the neighborhood. It's tough because no one ever has any cash. It's like a big deal if we get pepperoni.
I have $8.
Shh! Don't go announcing it!
He stops chewing.
People in here don't have any money. I don't have 2 cents to rub together.
I nod. I never heard that one before.
No? You like it?
Yeah.
What about, I don't have a pot to piss in, or a window to throw it out of?
Nope.
What about, I got Jack and shit, and Jack left town?
No. Where do you get them all?
From the old neighborhood. Give me a ringy-ding. Catch you on the flip side. It's the best way to talk.
A ringy-ding? What's that, a call?
Don't ask yuppie questions.
Humble scans the room for people to talk about. He enjoys talking about other people. He just enjoys talking, I've discovered. But he especially enjoys talking about other people. And when he does so, he puts on a peculiar sort of voice that's not quite a whisper, but is pitched at such a low monotone that no one notices it. He also seems able to throw it, so it feels like he's speaking into my left ear.
So I suppose you've become familiar with our lovely clientele here on the floor. President Armelio is the president.
He nods over at Armelio, who has finished his food first and is getting up to return the tray.
You see how fast he eats? If you could harness a quarter of his energy, you could power the island of Manhattan. I'm not joking.
He should really work in a place with people like us. He has such a good heart, and he's never down.
So why is he in here?
He's psychotic, of course.
You should have seen him when they brought him in. He was screaming his head off about his mom. He's Greek.
Huh.
Now there's Ebony. She of the ass. That is definitely the biggest ass I've ever seen. I'm not even into asses, but if you were, man, you could lose yourself in there. It's like its own municipality. I think that's why she needs the cane. She's also the only woman I've ever known who wears velvet pants. I think you have to have a butt like that to wear velvet pants. They only make them in extra, extra, extra large. I didn't even notice them.
Well, give it a while. After a few days, you start to notice people's clothes, seeing as how they all wear the same stuff every day.
Things don't get dirty?
They do laundry on Tuesdays and Fridays. Who gave you your tour when you came in?
Bobby?
He should have told you that.
Humble swivels his head, then turns back.
Now, Bobby and Johnny, they're at a table together, as they were at lunch. Those two were some of the biggest methamphetamine addicts in New York City, period, in the 90s. They were called Fiend One and Fiend Two. The party didn't really start until they showed up.
That must have been such a feeling, even through all the drugs, I think. To come into a house and have people well up and greet you.
All right, man, you're here. What's up?
That was probably as addictive as the amphetamines. People sort of do that to Aaron.
What happened to them? I ask. What happens to anybody? They got burned out, lost all their money, ended up here.
Got no families, got no women.
Well, I think Bobby has one.
He talks on the phone with her.
You can't tell from that. People pretend to be on the phone all the time, like her.
He pitches his head at the bug-eyed woman who was standing behind me when I was talking with my family.
The professor. I've caught her on the phone talking to Dr. Dialtone. She's a university professor. She ended up here because she thinks someone tried to spray her apartment with insecticide. She has newspaper clippings about it and everything.
Humble turns.
The black kid with the glasses? He looks pretty normal, but he has it bad. You notice he doesn't come out of his room a lot. That's because he's scared that gravity is going to reverse and he's going to fall up into the ceiling. When he goes outside, he has to be near trees so, in case the gravity stops, he'll have something to hold on to. I think he's about 17. Have you talked to him?
No.
He doesn't really talk. I don't know how much they can do for him.
The guy looks up at the ceiling fan above the dining room, shudders, and forks food into his mouth.
Then there's Jimmy. Jimmy's been here a lot. I've been here 24 days, and I've seen him come and go twice. You seem to like him.
We came in together.
He's a cool guy, and he has good teeth.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Pearly whites. Not a lot of people in here have that. I myself wonder what happened to Ebony's teeth.
What's wrong with them? I turn.
Don't look. She has none. You didn't notice? She's on a liquid diet. Just gums. I wonder if she sold them, tooth by tooth.
I bite my tongue. I can't help it. I shouldn't be laughing at any of these people, and neither should Humble. But maybe it's okay, somewhere, somehow, because we're enjoying life. I'm not sure. Jimmy, two tables away, notices my stifled laughter, smiles at me, and laughs himself.
I told you, it come to you.
There we go. What is going on in his mind?
Humble asks. I can't help it. It's too much. I crack up. Juice and chicken tender bits spray my plate.
Oh, I got you now,
Humble continues.
And here comes the guest of honor, Solomon.
The Hasidic Jewish guy comes in holding up his pants. He still has food in his beard. He grabs his tray and opens a microwaved packet of spaghetti and starts shoveling it into his mouth, making slurping, gulping groans.
This guy eats once a day, but it's like his last day on earth,
Humble says.
I think he's the most far gone of everybody. He's got like a direct audience with God.
Solomon looks up, twists his head from side to side, and resumes eating. Humble drops to a true whisper.
He did a few hundred tabs of acid and blew his pupils out. His eyeballs are permanently dilated.
No way.
Absolutely. It's a certain cult of the Hasidics, the Jewish acid heads. There's like a part of their holy writings that tells them it's the way to talk to God. But he took it too far.
Solomon gets up, leaves his tray disgustedly at the table, and moves out of the room with alarming speed.
He's like the mole man, back to his hole, Humble says. The real mole people are the anorexics. You don't even see them.
How many people are in here? I ask.
They say 25, Humble says, but that's not counting the stowaways.
I look around. Charles slash Jennifer isn't in the room.
Did the, Charles, did he leave? Yeah, the tranny's gone. Left this afternoon.
Tranny hit on you?
Yeah. Smitty lets him do that. Gets a kick out of it.
I can't believe he's just gone. They don't, like, throw a party for you when you leave?
No way. People here don't want to get out. Getting out means going back to the streets or to jail, or to try and fish their things out of an impounded car like me. Your kind of situation, with the parents and a house, that's rare. And also, with so many people coming and going, we'd be nuts to try and have a party every time. We'd end up like Fiend One and Fiend Two.
My tray is a mess from the food spraying out.
You crack me up, Humble, I tell him.
I know. I'm a great time for everybody. Too bad I'm in here instead of on stage getting paid for it.
Why don't you try going on stage?
I'm old. I have to get some napkins. I rise and go out to Smitty, who hands me a stack. I return, wipe off my tray, and start in on the pair.
You have a secret admirer, Humble says. I should have guessed. I know how you operate.
What?
She was just here. Look at your chair.
I get up and check it. There's a piece of paper lying there, face down. I flip it around, and it says, "Hope you're having a good time. Visiting hours are tomorrow from 7 to 7:05 p.m. I don't smoke."
See? Your little girl with the cut-up face just left it.
Humble gets up.
I had a feeling. Now you're starting to look like a rival male. I might have to keep my eye on you.
He deposits his tray and gets in line for his meds. I fold the paper up and put it in the pocket where my phone used to be. Chapter 28.
Craig! Hey, buddy! Phone!
I'm sitting with Humble outside the smoking lounge for the 10 p.m. cigarette break, thinking about where I was at the last 10 p.m., just getting into Mom's bed. Humble doesn't smoke, says it's disgusting, but everybody else in here does, practically, including the black guy who's afraid of gravity, and the big girl, Becca, both of whom I thought were underage. Armelio, Ebony, Bobby, Johnny, Jimmy, no matter how nuts they all seem, they have no problem migrating to the upper left of the H and sitting down on the couches quietly to wait for their particular brand of cigarettes, which I learn the hospital does not, in fact, provide for them. They come in with the packs themselves, and the nurses keep them in a special tray. Once they pull a cigarette out of their respective packs, they walk single file through a red door, passing Nurse Monica, whose job is to light everybody up. When the door closes, the smell drifts out from under it, and you hear talking. Everybody talking all at once, as if they saved their words for a time when there was smoke to send them through.
"How are you doing for your first day, Craig?" Nurse Monica asked me 5 minutes ago as she closed the door. "You don't smoke, I see."
"No." "That's good.
Terrible habit. And it happens so much to people your age."
"A lot of my friends smoke. I just, you know, never liked it."
"I see you are adjusting quite well to the floor."
"Yeah."
"Good, good. That is so important. Tomorrow we're going to talk more about your adjustment and your situation and how you're feeling."
"Okay."
"You gotta watch out for this one," Humble said. "He's crafty." "Oh, yeah?"
Monica asked. I was looking for the blonde girl, Noelle. I had to remember to meet her. But she wasn't around. Neither was Solomon. Next to Humble was the woman he identified as the professor, watching us with her bugged-out eyes. Unprompted, Humble started talking with me and Monica about this old girlfriend of his, who had, in his words, pigtail nipples, like curly fries, I kid you not. Monica laughed and laughed. The professor said Humble was disgusting. Monica said it was okay to laugh once in a while, and did she have a story to share?
Yeah, we all know you had some indiscretions in your youth, Professor, Humble prodded.
The professor got a dreamy look in her eyes. I almost thought she was going to have a seizure. And she said in a light little voice, with a nasal twinge, I had a lot of guys, but I only had one man. I was wondering where I'd heard that before, when Armelio interrupted.
Come on, buddy, phone is for you.
Right. I get up.
You're lucky, buddy. It's after 10. They usually shut the phone off at 10.
Shut the phone off? I picture a big lever in my mind, a man heaving it down. What happens if someone calls and the phone's off?
It just rings and rings, Humble yells out, and people know they're not in Kansas anymore.
I walk down the hall. The payphone receiver is hanging and swaying. I pick it up. Hello?
Hey, is this the loony bin?
It's Aaron. It's Aaron, hi. How'd you get this number? I ask. The man with the beard, who I saw rocking in the dining room when I first came in, is pacing the central hall, staring at me.
My girl gave it to me. What do you think? What's it like in there, dude?
Aaron asks. How do you know where I am?
I looked it up, man. You think I'm an idiot? I go to the same school as you. I did a reverse number search and found exactly where you are. Arjunon Hospital, adult psychiatric. Dude, how'd you get an adult? Do they serve beer up there?
Aaron, come on.
I'm serious. How about girls? Are there any hot girls around? Ow!
I hear laughing in the background above rap.
Give me the phone.
Ronnie's high-pitched bleat comes through the line.
Let me talk.
Ronnie comes into focus.
Dude, can you get me any Vicodin?
Howls, howls of laughter. And in the background, Nia protesting.
Guys, don't bother him. Gimme... Craig, no, seriously.
Aaron is back on.
I'm really sorry, dude. How are you, man?
I'm... okay. I'm starting to sweat.
What happened?
I didn't have a good night, and I checked myself into the hospital.
What's that mean, didn't have a good night?
The man in my stomach is back, tugging at me. I want to vomit through the phone. I'm depressed, okay, Aaron?
Yeah, I know. About what?
No, man, I'm depressed in general. I have, like, clinical depression.
No way. You're like the happiest guy I know.
What are you talking about?
That's a joke, Craig. You're like the craziest person I know. Remember on the bridge? But, you know, the problem is you don't chill enough. Like, even when you're here, you're always worried about school or something. You never just kick back and let things slide, you know what I mean? We're having a party tonight. Where are you going to be?
Aaron, who's in the room?
Nia, Ronnie, Scruggs, my friend Delilah.
I don't even know Delilah. So all these people know where I am now.
Dude, we think it's awesome where you are. We want to visit.
I can't believe you.
What?
I can't believe you're doing this.
Don't be a girl. You know if I was in the mental ward, you'd call me up and rag on me a little. It's because we're friends, man.
It's not a mental ward.
What?
It's a psychiatric hospital. It's for short-stay patients. A mental ward is longer.
Well, clearly you've been there long enough to be an expert.
How long are you staying? Until I have a baseline established.
What does that mean? Wait, I still don't get it. What was wrong with you in the first place?
I told you, I'm depressed. I take pills for it, like your girlfriend.
Like my girlfriend? Craig, shut up! Nia yells in the background.
My girlfriend doesn't take any pills, Aaron says. Ronnie yells,
the only thing she takes is...
The rest is cut off by laughter, and I hear him getting hit with something. Maybe you should talk to her a little more and figure out what she's actually like, I say. You might learn something.
You're telling me how to treat Nia now? Aaron asks.
I hear him lick his lips.
What, like I don't know what this is really about?
What, Aaron? What is it really about?
You want my girl, dude. You've wanted her for like...